All these languages have a common resemblance, as each, as we've already explained, rings the changes upon a number of common roots. When we find the same root word running through all or most of these tongues, it seems reasonable to conclude that the thing that root word signifies must have been known to the common ancestors. Of course, if they have exactly the same word in their languages, this may not be the case. It may be the new name of a new thing or of a new idea that has spread over the world quite recently. Gas, for instance, is a word that was made by Van Helmont, a Dutch chemist, about 1625, and has spread into most civilized tongues. And tobacco, again, is an American Indian word which followed the introduction of smoking almost everywhere. But if the same word turns up in a number of languages, and if it follows the characteristic modifications of each language, we may feel sure that it has been in that language and a part of that language since the beginning, suffering the same changes with the rest of it. We know, for example, that the words for wagon and wheel run in this fashion through the Aryan tongues, and so we're able to conclude that the primitive Aryans, the more purely Nordic Aryans, had wagons, though it would seem from the absence of any common roots for spokes, rim, or axle, that their wheels weren't wheelwright's wheels with spokes, but made of the trunks of trees shaped out with an axle between the ends. These primitive wagons were drawn by oxen. The early Aryans didn't ride or drive horses. They had very little to do with horses. The reindeer men were a horse people, but the Neolithic Aryans were a cow people. They ate beef, not horse, and after many ages they began this use of draft cattle. They reckoned wealth by cows. They wandered, following pasture and trekking their goods, as the South African Boers do, in ox wagons, though of course their wagons were much clumsier than any to be found in the world today. They probably ranged over very wide areas. They were migratory, but not in the strict sense of the word nomadic. They moved in a slower, clumsier fashion than did the later, more specialized nomadic peoples. They were forest and parkland people without horses. They were developing a migratory life out of the more settled forest-clearing life of the earlier Neolithic period. Changes of climate, which were replacing forest by pasture and the accidental burning of forests by fire, may have assisted this development. We've already described the sort of home the primitive Aryan occupied and his household life, so far as the remains of the Swiss pile dwellings enable us to describe these things. Mostly, his houses were of too flimsy a sort, probably of wattle and mud, to have survived, and possibly he left them and trekked on for very slight reasons. The Aryan peoples burnt their dead, a custom they still preserve in India, but their predecessors, the long barrow people, the Iberians, buried their dead in a sitting position. In some ancient Aryan burial mounds, round barrows, the urns containing the ashes of the departed are shaped like houses, and these represent rounded huts with thatched roofs. The grazing of the primitive Aryan was far more important to him than his agriculture. At first he cultivated with a rough wooden hoe. Then, after he'd found out the use of cattle for draft purposes, he began real ploughing with oxen, using at first a suitably bent tree bough as his plough. His first cultivation, before that came about, must have been rather in the form of garden patches near the house buildings than of fields. Most of the land his tribe occupied was common land on which the cattle grazed together. He never used stone for building house walls until upon the very verge of history. He used stone for hearths, for example, at Glastonbury, and sometimes stone substructures. He did, however, make a sort of stone house in the centre of the great mounds in which he buried the ashes of his illustrious dead. He may have learnt this custom from his Iberian neighbours and predecessors. It was these dark whites of the Heliolithic culture, and not the primitive Aryans, who were responsible for such temples as Stonehenge or Karnak in Brittany. These Aryans were congregated not in cities but in districts of pasturage as clans and tribal communities. They formed loose leagues of mutual help under chosen leaders. They had centres where they could come together with their cattle in times of danger, and they made camps with walls of earth and palisades, many of which are still to be traced in the history-worn contours of the European scenery. The leaders under whom men fought in war were often the same men as the sacrificial purifiers who were their early priests. The knowledge of bronze spread late in Europe. The Nordic European had been making his slow advances age by age for 7,000 or 8,000 years before the metals came. By that time his social life had developed so that there were men of various occupations and men and women of different ranks in the community. There were men who worked wood and leather, potters and carvers. The women span and wove and embroidered. There were chiefs and families that were distinguished as leaderly and noble. The Aryan tribesman varied the monotony of his herding and wandering. He consecrated undertakings and celebrated triumphs, held funeral assemblies, and distinguished the traditional seasons of the year by feasts. His meats we've already glanced at. He was an eager user of intoxicating drinks. He made these of honey, of barley, and, as the Aryan-speaking tribes spread southward, of the grape, and he got merry and drunken. Whether he first used yeast to make his bread light or to ferment his drink, we don't know. At his feasts there were individuals with the gift for playing the fool, who did so no doubt to win the laughter of their friends, but there was also another sort of men, of great importance in their time, and still more important to the historian, certain singers of songs and stories, the bards or rhapsodists. These bards existed among all the Aryan-speaking peoples. They were a consequence of, and a further factor in, that development of spoken language which was the chief of all the human advances made in Neolithic times. They chanted or recited stories of the past, or stories of the living chief and his people. They told other stories that they invented. They memorized jokes and catches. They found and seized upon and improved the rhythms, rhymes, alliterations, and such like possibilities latent in language. They probably did much to elaborate and fix grammatical forms. They were the first great artists of the ear, as the later Aurignacian rock painters were the first great artists of the eye and hand. No doubt they used much gesture. Probably they learned appropriate gestures when they learnt their songs, but the order and sweetness and power of language was their primary concern, and they mark a new step forward in the power and range of the human mind. They sustained and developed in men's minds a sense of a greater something than themselves, the tribe, and of a life that extended back into the past. They not only recalled old hatreds and battles, they recalled old alliances and a common inheritance. The feats of dead heroes lived again. The Aryans began to live in thought before they were born and after they were dead. Like most human things, this bardic tradition grew first slowly and then more rapidly. By the time bronze was coming into Europe, there wasn't an Aryan people that hadn't a profession and training of bards. In their hands, language became as beautiful as it is ever likely to be. These bards were living books, man histories, guardians and makers of a new and more powerful tradition in human life. Every Aryan people had its long poetical records thus handed down, its sagas, Teutonic, its epics, Greek, its Vedas, Old Sanskrit.